It's Friday, March 17th, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, it's St. Patrick's Day. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you. Hopefully, they'll be wearing the green caps out there in Arizona, right? They'll at least do that for the holiday.
Yeah, they usually do, Joe, and it's kind of they frequently end up playing the Reds on St. Patrick's Day. So yeah, they both they kind of wear the green caps, and the Reds I think are a little more into it than Cleveland, if I remember, you know, my past St. Patrick's Days in the desert.
Well, I think the Reds have like green jerseys that they wear too, or something like that. But
yeah, green. I don't know if they do the green bases. Somebody they might do the green bases too.
Well, will they be the extra large bases? I mean, I don't know if you can find the 18-inch bases now in that size. The Guardians yesterday beat the White Sox 5-1. Tristan McKenzie had a nice outing for Cleveland on the mound.
Yeah, you know, he was coming off a tough outing against Milwaukee. Really, he's been kind of knocked around this spring. 12.00 ERA coming into yesterday's game, but he goes four innings, one run, Joe, five hits, five strikeouts, two walks, and you know, he gives up the run in the first inning, and then, you know, does a nice job. Francona said after the game, he had some traffic on the bases, five hits, two walks. But, you know, he was glad to see him pitch with guys on base, especially since he pitched well. So, you know, he was kind of stopping threats and getting strikeouts at the right time. So that's encouraging.
Yeah, a lot of times in these spring training or exhibition situations, even with that reentry rule, sometimes when the innings get long, you don't necessarily get an opportunity to see your guys pitch with a lot of traffic in game situations that they'll be facing during the regular season. It's sometimes a real sanitized, controlled environment. And, you know, you want them to have that sort of that challenge to see them work on the skills of overcoming it. And what am I going to do in these situations? And that's what McKenzie faced with runners on base yesterday. He was able to resort to his, bag of tricks to get out of whatever jams he was in, and that happened, and a good step in the progress towards where he needs to be for opening day and beyond. So, Tito said it's good to see him work out of trouble in a situation like that, but it's also good to see him, log four plus innings and get through situations where, he's going to face during the regular season.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the Indians, the Guardians' nemesis, Elvis Andrus, of course, starts the game with a double, comes around to score, but that was the only run Chicago scored against McKenzie and on the afternoon as well. But in the second, he gives up a leadoff double to Sheets and pitches around that. And, so like you were saying, Joe, he did a nice job with traffic on the bases because, sometimes that can turn into a disaster.
Miles Straw had a couple of hits in the game. He was on base and, just good to see him starting to, sort of get his timing and get himself together. Tito had been concerned about the number of at-bats that he was getting, the number of opportunities he's seen. But it seems like, a couple of at-bats here yesterday and he looked like he has things together.
Yeah, they're really pushing him to be more aggressive at the plate, Joe. They want him to, take some more hacks, not wait for the perfect pitch, not wait, for the ball in a perfect location. They want him to gamble a little bit more. He makes contact, but he doesn't make a lot of hard contact, especially last year. So, yesterday he had the double, had a single, and got robbed of a third hit by a great catch by Oscar Colas in center field. Chicago's, I think that's a rookie center fielder. So, and interestingly enough, Joe, in the fourth inning, he singles with one out and then gets balked to second base when the White Sox pitcher tried three pickoff attempts and did not get them. So that's the first time we've seen that this spring. And it was interesting just to see it happen, I guess.
Yeah, I guess that's one of the rules that I think we're going to see, you know, come into play a little bit less in terms of seeing an actual third pickoff attempt. I can't imagine during the regular season that they would ever risk balking a guy to second base by throwing over three full times.
Yeah, it was strange. And I don't know if the guy lost count of the outs or, you know, lost count of the attempts. He was Jesse Schultens was on the mound for Chicago. So, or, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe he got tired. He just figured to throw over there to give himself a break. I'm not sure. I don't know what the deal was, but it didn't work. And it was, an odd occurrence because they played 18, 19, 20 games already. And that's the first time we've seen it.
Yeah, I can see them, you know, allowing the pitch clock to expire for a ball if they want to catch a breather or catch a break or something like that more often than, let's say, you know, balking a guy to second base to try and catch a break that way. Plesac might be the only one that I'd be concerned about because of the number of times he likes to throw over because he's so in love with his own pickoff move and he's just so convinced that he can get every guy every time. I mean, the chances of now just a pure pickoff where you throw over and you got a guy, I think are going to be fewer and further between this year than ever before.
Yeah, definitely. Especially for a right-hander, you know, lefty's still going to have an advantage, but a right-hander, like even as quick as Zach Plesac is, it's going to be tough, I think. And another kind, there was a couple pitch violations too, Joe. In the first inning, Oscar Gonzalez, you know, received a ball four call on a pitch violation against Nick Avila. And then in the sixth inning, Palacios, you know, received a ball on a pitch violation. So, you know, you're starting to see more and more of that now.
Yeah, and I saw an interview with Max Scherzer where he was talking about how, you know, this is designed to, the pitch clock here is designed to improve the pace of the game, not change the results of the game. And when you've got these automatic balls being issued, he doesn't want to see it happening in regular season games where it decides a regular season game. And I think everybody's in agreement with that. It's going to be a rocky road to start with. I think early on in the season, you're going to see some pretty controversial results come of this. But as we get more and more used to it, you'll see fewer and fewer of those pitch clock violations. At least that's the hope. That's what everybody's, you know, sort of banking on at this point.
Yeah, there was a couple on Cleveland pitchers as well. Tristan McKenzie got one in the fourth, and Class A got one in the fifth. And after, you know, the top of the fifth, after the inning was over, you know, Carl Willis, Class A, and Tito Francona met with the home plate umpire to discuss it. I think they were just trying, you know, Class A was a little confused about what happened.
Offensively, Josh Naylor coming up with the big hit of the day for the Guardians, really provided the majority of their offense with a grand slam.
Yeah, and listening to Tom Hamilton call the slam. I mean, Joe, he hit it out of the ballpark. It sounds like, you know, to right field. The ball jumps to right field, anyways. But you know, there's a high wall there. Then there's a party center there, a roof of the party center, and behind that there's a the concourse and a fence. And I guess he hit it. Naylor hit it over everything. So, you know, that's, I'd like to see the distance on that one. But
and beyond the fence is the airplane graveyard. So if he hit it to the airplane graveyard, that's saying something.
Yeah, that was a shot. And, I thought Tito had something interesting to say after the game. He said, you know, he loves to see, you know, Naylor, you know, a swing, to see Naylor swing when he's, you know, has his sights set on the middle of the field. He said that's what he did in that swing. You know, he said when he tries to do that, he doesn't do it. When he doesn't try to do it, you know, that's when a home run like that happens.
Where, you know, it just continues Naylor's success against the White Sox uniform. I think if he sees the White Sox out there, he turns in his best effort. I think there's going to be some internal motivation forever now, ever since that those games in May where, you know, he came back and led the incredible comeback for the Guardians in Chicago. So every time he sees that White Sox jersey, it's a little extra motivation for him.
Yeah, definitely. And I think about this time, I think he spared his batting helmet. I don't think it, you know, was it rattled down the dugout after he hit that grand slam. At least no one said it did. So the batting helmet is probably happy about that.
Well, he's at home, so he probably wasn't hearing heckles from fans in the stands. And, you know, again, we talked yesterday about the Edwin Diaz situation and the, you know, maybe it might be time to check our celebrations as they go. We don't want to see anybody get hurt before the start of the regular season. Another familiar face back from the World Baseball Classic, Richie Palacios, was back out there in the lineup after having played for Team Netherlands in the pools out in the Asia Pacific region for the WBC.
Yeah, made the 15-hour flight back home. You know, came in late as a defensive replacement for Steven Kwan. You know, got an at bat, and I guess Quantrill is back, and so is Bo Naylor. You know, they've rejoined the team yesterday from Canada, and I guess you know we'll see what Josh. Josh Wolf is coming back too from Team Israel. I would imagine he's coming back and rejoin the minor league, you know, the minor league side of the, you know, the training, the Indians, the Guardians training center.
And Mabrys Veloria and Diane Frias, who were with Team Columbia, also scheduled to be back in camp today. So should be interesting. I guess the only guy left on a WBC roster right now is Andres Jimenez playing with Team Venezuela, and they get the United States coming up tomorrow, and we'll talk about that here in a minute. The rotation for the Guardians looks like it's shaping up, and it's sort of set heading forward right now. Looked like what we have. You said Aaron Savali is going to pitch tonight against the Reds, and then beyond that, I think Cal Quantrill is going to get a chance to get out there, and Xavier Curry as well.
Yeah, I think now we're going to start seeing those five guys probably line up and pitch the last 10 or 12 games of spring training, Joe. I'm not sure. Curry is supposed to pitch Savali tonight, so we'll see if he gets a start. But I would think it's going to be the five guys, Bieber, McKenzie, Quantrill, Plesac, and Savali. Those are the guys we're going to probably start seeing on a regular basis now.
Right. It's Savali and Curry against Cincinnati, Plesac against Arizona, Quantrill against Seattle, and then they haven't announced. There's to be determined against Colorado on Sunday. There's a split squad on Saturday, so why you have Plesac and Quantrill going on the same day there. It'll be interesting to see. Everything will revolve around getting Bieber one or two more starts before opening day. I think he'll have one more, and then he should pitch on Sunday of next week before the Thursday opener.
Yeah, and that'll give them a full 4 or 5 days rest, whatever they decide to give them. But yeah, he is on schedule for sure for that opening day on March 30th in Seattle.
So far, Aaron Savali has done well in a big spring for him. He's looked pretty good. So to get him out there on the mound again, fourth start for him Pretty important outing for Aaron Civale.
Yeah, I think, you know, Aaron has been healthy this spring. That's the key. You know, after 2 years of kind of nagging little freakish injuries, you know, he's I think he's looked more like himself. You know, he looked stronger to me, Joe, when I was out in spring training. And he looked, you know, he looked determined. He looked like he knew this was a big year for him. And, you know, all the talk was, you know, would somebody threaten Civale or Plesac when spring training, you know, when spring training opened? And we haven't seen that really. I don't think, you know, I think the five guys that ended last season are going to be, you know, in the opening day rotation when this season starts. But we have seen some interesting developments in the bullpen, Joe, with Hunter Gaddis yesterday.
Yeah, Hunter Gaddis and like we mentioned, Xavion Curry, both guys that are look like they're competing right now, and it could be very interesting. Civale 2-1 in three starts with you know, a 4.50 ERA, seven strikeouts in six innings pitched, but his walks and hits per innings pitched is down under one. It's a 0.83, which is real nice. But yeah, with two spots being open in the bullpen right now, with you're not sure if Sam Henches is going to get a chance to throw at all before camp closes. He's probably going to start the season on the injured list. So you're probably going to need one of those guys. They're the best options right now because they're already on the 40-man roster. You don't have to create any room or space or anything like that. So Hunter Gaddis has done well for himself so far this spring.
Yeah, he pitched two scoreless yesterday. And, you know, he followed Class A into the game, six up, six down in the fifth and sixth innings, two strikeouts. He's done a nice job, Joe. He doesn't look like the guy that, you know, struggled in those two starts when he came up last season. And then the lefty, Tim Herron, you know, kind of prospect, he had two scoreless innings as well. You know, he gave up three hits, two strikeouts, but I think that was by far his probably best outing of the spring. And, you know, it's still to be determined, you know, do they want him in the pen? Do they need a lefty in the pen? Or do they think he needs more seasoning?
Yeah, Gaddis, four appearances so far this spring, 2.89 ERA. He's thrown nine and a third innings. He's struck out 11 and has walked and hits per innings pitched 1.07. So, you know, that's pretty impressive for, like you said, a guy who, you know, after the first time we saw him against Houston, he looked shell shocked out there, but now he looks a little more comfortable.
Joe, and when I see him, I think of you know, the movie Aquaman. The star, he looks just like the star there.
Jason Momoa. He looks like. He didn't have the tattoos down his arm like Jason Momoa or anything like that. No. But he's a big dude, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, he's got the beard, he's got the hair. It's I don't know, maybe that's just me, but that's what I flash to when I see him.
He looks more like a guy in a Ford pickup truck commercial to me. He looks like a good old boy, and he gets up there on the mound, and at 6'6", he's pretty imposing. Another guy that's having a really good spring, Gabriel Arias, just keeps hitting, and he's sort of forcing them to answer their own questions about who's going to be the utility guy and who's going to get the opportunity and who might have to head down to Columbus to keep getting regular at bats.
Yeah, he went 1-for-3 yesterday, a double. You know, I kind of feel sorry for this guy, Joe. We really haven't got a good look at him every day, you know, just to see what he can do at one position, you know, and, you know, shortstop is supposedly his best spot, but, you know, I don't think we're going to get to see him there maybe until next year or whatever happens, you know, with Ahmed Rosario, you know, all the scenarios that could happen with him. But, you know, right now he's a utility guy. He's bouncing around and he's making the best of it. And, you know, and right now, and he's hitting, you know, he's always hitting spring training. And, you know, he's doing it again this year. So, you know, I wonder, you know, it's kind of putting pressure on Tyler Freeman. You know, you really, when you look at the composition of the roster, how it could shake out, do they need two utility guys or does a guy like David Fry sneak in there, you know, who could second and third and, I mean, first and third and catch, you know, so there's some possibilities here that we just, you know, haven't got a grip on. But I think we know one thing, that Arias is probably on this ball club right now.
Yeah, I would be absolutely stunned if Gabriel Arias doesn't open the season with the major league club. And they will move him around. They will play him, you know, at third base on a day when they want to get Hosey off his feet, or, you know, play him over at second base when they want to get Jimenez off his feet. I think the only chance we're going to get to see him an extended, you know, everyday sort of stretch of games will be if Rosario either gets hurt, or, you know, if he is less effective come, let's say, the end of April, you know, mid-May or something like that. They're going to give a guy like Amed Rosario a chance to, you know, hit himself out of any sort of early slump. But if it looks like he's not going to be effective after a while, then you might see Gabriel Arias in there at shortstop a little more often.
Yeah, and, you know, I think the injury is the big thing, Joe. I mean, hopefully you don't want to wish an injury on anybody, but, you know, that's probably his best chance to get some playing time. You know, Rosario's starting to come on a little bit. He had 3 hits 2 days ago, 2 hits yesterday. So he's starting to, you know, get ready for opening day. So I think, you know, it would take something out of the ordinary for Arias to see a lot of playing time at shortstop.
Who could be in that next group of guys? You know, it's going to be a smaller group of guys getting cut or sent down out of camp, but you've got to make, like they said, make room for, you know, the regulars to keep playing a little more often and, you know, be out there. So, you know, who do you think, you know, could Freeman be in that next group of guys to head down?
Yeah, I think he could, Joe. I think, you know, he got an at bat yesterday. We'll see. You know, they've got what, split squads on Saturday. And usually after that, you know, a roster cut is coming. You know, they got an off day next Wednesday. So, you know, the roster's going down. And I would think, you know, but what do they got? Like, I think they have, what, 40, 45 players in camp right now? 42 players in camp?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Something like that. 45. Yeah.
So, you know, they're going to have to make a significant cut, but they won't do it until next week sometime. And I would, Freeman's got a, you know, Freeman could be one of those guys, you know, a guy like Mabrys Velaria. We just don't know how, you know, him going to the WBC has affected his chances. You know, we saw them, you know, option Bo Naylor down. So, you know, that's a guy to look at. And, you know, Connor Pilkington in the pitching department, you know, some, you know, is it Curry or is it Gattis, you know? So there's still some people that could, you know, there's still obviously some people that are going to get sent down.
Yeah, and there's pitchers who are out there that they'll keep just to have extra arms to get through games, but they can always call up, at least right now, they can always call up guys from the minor league camp to sit there and provide a little backup during the exhibition games. But a guy like a Nick Mikulacik, who could be on the bubble, you know, might be sticking around for a little bit more of a look as well. Tuki Toussaint, you know, I don't think they'll make a decision on him quite yet, but veteran guys who you know, have an opportunity somewhere else, they might cut them loose as well. I think pretty good chance Zach Collins might get, you know, might be one of the next cuts in terms of the next group of guys, just to give some of these guys a little bit more time behind the plate. Micah Pries, I think they could, you know, I could see them keeping him around, you know, being one of the last cuts just because, you know, they like him, but and he provides depth at different positions. And then in the outfield, Roman Quinn, he's hung around this long, but I don't think he's going to last much longer now that Palacios is back.
Yeah, you know, and I heard Quinn has an out clause on March 24th. So, you know, that's when, you know, he could make a decision, or he could, you know, ask the Guardians, am I on the roster? If not, I want to become a free agent. Or he could decide if they want to keep him in the organization to, you know, start the season at AAA. And all these guys, probably all the, you know, guys like Collins and, you know, Gallagher and Mabrys, all the, you know, the guys on, minor league deals that have, you know, that were basically free agents that they brought in. They probably all have out clauses toward the end of March.
Right. As far as, you know, they're playing the Reds tonight. And we talked about that. We talked about David Fry being an interesting guy in terms of his versatility. And you know, maybe they keep him because they automatically get a third catcher in that scenario as well. So the roster composition, it's coming down to a couple of names, a couple of positions here, and we'll keep an eye on that as we move forward. All right, we wanted to mention, we talked at length yesterday about Edwin Diaz and the injury that he suffered after the win in the World Baseball Classic by Puerto Rico. They were celebrating the win, and he hurt his knee. Turned out it was a patellar tendon that he injured, and he's already had the surgery, and it's going to be season-ending surgery for him. That's you know, pretty quick turnaround for that kind of thing. But you know, it turns out that's the Mets now are without their $100 million closer for the foreseeable future.
Just a devastating injury. Just, you know, God, that, you know, that's worst case scenario, Joe. The guy, you know, he does his job, he gets the save, and then he blows out his knee celebrating. I mean, it's a freak injury. Yeah, it could happen anywhere. But the fact that it happened away from the Mets, that away from team control, just makes it more devastating for the Mets and for that ball club, for a team with a $350 million payroll that, you know, had done an owner had done everything possible to ensure that they were going to at least get to the World Series this year. And just, you know, one little celebration, and it, you know, you lose, you know, a key piece to that club. And, you know, it makes you wonder about the WBC. I guess, you know, people are saying, you know, one injury shouldn't dampen, you know, or take away from this event. But if you're the Mets, you're probably feeling a little different today right now.
Right. And you saw immediately Mookie Betts and Mike Trout came out and supported the World Baseball Classic, supported the idea of playing for your country and being out there, and how it means something different to the players out there. They understand that, you know, the fans have one take about it, but it's not the only thing to consider. These players want to play for their country and compete. And it's not like it doesn't mean anything to them. It definitely does for the guys who sacrifice their time to be out there. But yeah, if the Guardians were in the position, let's say it was Emmanuel Clase instead of Edwin Diaz, and it very well could have been Emmanuel Clase under different circumstances. I think the impact to a market sized team like the Guardians, as opposed to the one that they have there in New York, is completely different. And, you know, nobody's going to be crying any tears for the Mets being in that situation. But it's certainly not a great time to be a Mets fan if you're out there. That Puerto Rico team is going to take on Mexico tonight in the World Baseball Classic in Florida. Big game for Team Puerto Rico, big game for Mexico. And the pitching matchup is one of, you know, pretty significant as you've got Marcus Stroman going for Team Puerto Rico, and you've got Julio Urias from the Dodgers, the lefty, going for Team Mexico. Should be a really great matchup.
Yeah, great matchup, great atmosphere. It's in Miami. It should be a great game. I'm watching Francisco Lindor, Joe. He's hitting .467, 7-for-15 in the tournament. And in 2017, he hit two home runs against Mexico in the WBC in 2017. So that's my guy to watch right now.
Tell you what, Francisco Lindor for Puerto Rico is looking a lot more like Francisco Lindor when he played for Cleveland. You can definitely see the joy in his game is back. It's been missing the last couple of seasons for him playing in New York, playing with the Mets. I think he looks like a completely different ball player right now.
Yeah, that's a big market. It's a hard market to get used to in New York. And, And it's not, I think people would say the Mets are a little easier than the Yankees. So Francisco's lucky he didn't go to the Bronx Bombers, but he looks like his old self. He's coming off a great year last season. And, you know, and he loves to play for Puerto Rico. He is one of the, you know, he's one of the elite players from that island. And he's, you know, he's representing the country well.
All right. Hey, wanted to mention our subscription service, Subtext, Guardian Subtext. Hoynsie will be out there next week, getting ready for the start of the regular season. We'll have, it's a great time to subscribe, $3.99 a month. If you log on to cleveland.com/subtext, you can find out how to subscribe there. And if you call or if you send a text message to 216-208-4346 to subscribe there, it'll send you a link back and you can get signed up and get all the back and forth with myself and Hoynsie, get our takes behind the scenes on some of these moves with the roster and what we're seeing in the World Baseball Classic. So sign up for Subtext there. Hoynsie, we'll be back with you on Monday and we'll talk to you then.
All right, Joe.